Welcome to ID the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee at Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. If you are new to intelligent design, ID the Future series ID Inquiry is the place to start. Each year, ID the Future has over 500,000 downloads, and Evolution News and Views receives over 1 million unique visitors. And our visitors bring many questions. In this podcast series, ID Inquiry, various scientists and scholars will briefly answer these queries and explain the basics of intelligent design. If you have a question you would like answered, send it to editor@evolutionnews.org. Today, we have with us on the show Dr. Jonathan Wells to discuss the concept of codes in living things and how they affect the debate over Darwinism and intelligent design. Jonathan Wells has received two PhDs, one in molecular and cell biology from the University of California at Berkeley, and one in religious studies from Yale University. A senior fellow at Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, he has previously worked as a postdoctoral research biologist at Berkeley and the supervisor of a medical laboratory in Fairfield, California. He has also taught biology at California State University in Hayward. Dr. Wells is the author of Icons of Evolution, Why Much of What We Teach About Evolution is Wrong, as well as The Myth of Junk DNA and The Politically Incorrect Guide to Darwinism and Intelligent Design, among other titles. His current research and writing centers on developmental information in embryos that is outside of and inherited independently of their DNA. Dr. Wells, thank you for being on with us and agreeing to answer a few questions.
I'm happy to be here, Sarah.
Today, we will be discussing some questions from ID the Future listener, Scott, about codes in living things. So to start off our discussion, Dr. Wells, what is a code in biology?
Well, a code, generally speaking, is a pattern that conveys information. Now, what information does is it limits whatever it's aimed at from a huge range of possibilities to a specific set of those possibilities. For example, if we have a long string of letters that really make no sense, they don't really limit anything except the letters themselves. But if the sentence actually means something in English, then it specifies a thought out of the infinite universe of thoughts that are out there. And that's the way information works. It can be in the form of letters, it can be in the form of digital information on a CD and specify music, say one song out of the infinite number of possible songs that are out there. And in biology, a code specifies, among other things, the form of an organism. And a code in biology is generally carried not by digital information or by letters, but by molecules. So a biological code is a pattern in molecules that carries information to specify features of the organism.
I like that description, that it's a code carried by molecules. Most of us, when we think of a code in biology, think of the genetic code. But are there other codes in living things? And if so, have these new codes appeared throughout the history of life?
Well, a genetic code can mean two things. To a biologist, it technically means the set of instructions by which information in DNA and RNA is translated into protein. You know, a certain set of subunits in RNA specifies a certain subset of amino acids and proteins. But that's not the only meaning of code in biology, genetic code, that is. The other meaning, somewhat less technical, is that the sequence of subunits in DNA and RNA carry information that specify proteins. So I'll use genetic code in the second sense, and there certainly is such a code. It's not as powerful as it's sometimes made out to be, as I'll explain in a minute, because there are other codes besides it. One code we could call the epigenetic code. It turns out that the DNA molecules in cells are chemically altered in many cases, not in a sense that the sequence of subunits changes, but the subunits are decorated, so to speak, with other molecules that affect which parts of the DNA get transcribed into RNA and therefore translated into protein. So that's another code in the organism that's independent of the sequence of DNA sequences. On top of that is still another code, the RNA splicing code. It turns out that in organisms such as our cells, when the DNA is transcribed into RNA, the RNA is then cut up and spliced back together. And it can be spliced back together in many ways. We know of one stretch of DNA in fruit flies, for example, that after RNA splicing can produce over 18,000 different proteins, a single stretch of DNA. So there's the RNA splicing code, about which we don't know a whole lot. It might be partly influenced by RNAs that have been transcribed from non-protein coding DNA, but we don't fully understand the nature of the RNA splicing code. On top of that is the sugar code. It turns out that almost every protein made in the cell is further modified by the addition of sugar molecules. Now, sugar molecules are far more complex than DNA and RNA. DNA and RNA sequences are linear, one-dimensional. But sugar molecules are three-dimensional, and so they carry a whole lot more information than the RNA and the DNA. So proteins are modified by the addition of sugar molecules that add a whole new layer of complexity to what's going on here. Then on top of the sugar code is the membrane code. It turns out that there's a pattern in the membrane of a living cell that's there before the DNA is transcribed and can be inherited independently of the DNA. And the membrane pattern is what determines the spatial arrangement of things in the cell. And the spatial arrangement is all important, especially in an embryo. Then finally, on top of the membrane code is something called the bioelectric code. There are molecules in the membranes of all our cells that generate electric fields. And these fields, once generated, form a three-dimensional pattern that is known to affect development. For example, in a frog embryo, researchers have modified the electric field that they generate without modifying the molecules or the membrane. And just by electrically modifying the bioelectric field, they can alter development. So there are at least six codes in biology, the genetic code and five others.
Wow. And each of those codes affect so much.
Yes, they all carry information. They all affect cellular activities and especially embryo development.
Why does the existence of these six codes present a problem for evolution?
Well, evolution, as most biologists mean the word, is a completely unguided process that depends on DNA mutations, which are basically accidental changes in DNA sequences, and natural selection, or survival of the fittest. Well, these unguided processes are incapable of producing the complex information that we find in these codes. Imagine a random string of letters. That could be produced by mutation and natural selection, but it conveys no information. Yet in the case of living things, these patterns have to convey information that is very specific. If they're off by just a little bit, the living thing is no longer alive.
That makes me think a little bit about what you said with the RNA splicing code, that one stretch of DNA can make 18,000 different proteins, but yet there are so many sequences of amino acids that do not make any proteins and sequences of RNA as well. So the chances of that happening seem to be very slim.
Extremely slim. I think the work of Doug Hex and Ann Gager has addressed that. When you think of the possible proteins, the possible sequences of amino acids, it's just a huge number. And the cell, the living cell, has to choose a small subset of that large number to survive. And that's what the information is doing.
So in light of that, why does the existence of these codes in biology support intelligent design?
Well, as I said a minute ago, they're a big problem for Darwinian evolution because an unguided process cannot cause them. But by implication, then, a guided process could. In fact, the only known cause in our experience of large amounts of information, such as we find in the cell, the only known cause is intelligence. Intelligence has foresight. It can choose from a wide range of possibilities to specify a target, that is, a protein or a membrane pattern, and then it can arrange things to reach that target. But an unguided process cannot do that. So that implies design, intelligent design.
Dr. Wells, so for our listeners who may want to learn more about these codes, are there any books or resources you could recommend to them?
Well, they could start, if they like, with an article I wrote a little over a year ago in the journal Biocomplexity. That's at www.bio-complexity.org. And it's about membrane patterns specifically, but it goes into the splicing code and the sugar code and the bioelectric code. If a listener wants to read that paper, I recommend going right to the summary. There's a lot of technical detail in there, but if the reader goes right to the summary, the whole story is repeated there in brief terms.
So it sounds like these codes in living things are a real problem for neo-Darwinism, and the information they contain provides support for intelligent design. I think there's a lot here for our listeners to learn. Thank you, Dr. Wells, for coming on the show today.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on ID the Future for ID Inquiry. If you have a question about intelligent design or Darwinian evolution, or about any aspect of the debate between the two theories, please send it to us at editor@evolutionnews.org. That's editor@evolutionnews.org. I'm Sarah Chaffee with ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.